Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Culture Shock Entertainment Report. Happy birthday, America! Happy birthday. It's Independence Day. I know we, some of us have mixed emotions about America, about our beautiful country, but it is a beautiful country. And all I can do is say, God bless America. May things continue to improve. And may we make this world a better place, because with these global listeners, we appreciate you also, and we appreciate your love for America, because if you didn't love America, you wouldn't be tuned in. And so we thank you for loving America, even if it's a second home or if you just love it. You plan to come here to live the American dream. I know we talk a lot about the checkered past of America, but it is Independence Day. And you know my lovely cousin Linda, she's going to share what she loves about America and what we can do better also about America. But I just want to wish everyone a happy Independence Day right here in the States, and those of you that are celebrating abroad also. I'm so delighted at our international friends that also take part in celebrating Independence Day. Thank you so much. And our soldiers and those that work abroad and live abroad, let's just celebrate Independence Day. I thought about going into the history and so on, but I am feeling Cousin Linda is ready to talk about Independence Day and other hot topics and what we both have on our minds. You all call us also and share with us the meaning of Independence Day, 4th of July, and what you would love to see happen with America and with our international relations also. The number is 516-595-8255, 516-595-8255. I am Beth, a.k.a. Be True, and my co-host is my lovely, very intelligent, first soldier, brother Warren Caller, and refer to her, Miss Linda Oliver. Hey there.
Hi, cousin. Hi, listeners, locally,
how
nationally,
are you?
And internationally. I'm fine. I'm cooling off. I went to the dumpster and the mailboxes this morning, and I sweated a bit, and I came back up in here, and I'm cooling it.
Me too. I have been out in the yard and, you know, trying to, you know, beautify everything, looking nice. That's how we are, right? And, yes, it's better today. We're not under heat advisory, but it's humid. And just like you, I came in and, you know, cleaned myself up and prepared to talk to you and the listeners. So it is hot and humid, but I think bad weather's coming later on today. We have sunny days scheduled, which you all probably do in Texas. We have sunny days predicted and with bad weather. And you know what? Even the weather people don't tell us where the locations will be. They're like, oh, there will be rain, but we're not sure what area. So it's like they're just going to show up in certain areas. So we just have to be prepared. I'm sure it's like that there in Texas also. So that goes
it
back
is.
To the weather. It goes back to the weather discussion around the country and around the world. It's so unpredictable. Not even the meteorologist can pinpoint what's going to happen.
Well, I would think with the improvements in technology that we would be able to get more specific weather predictions,
right,
or forecasts. But it seems like they've gotten less accurate than they were in,
right,
the past. And like you said, when we get weather reports here, unless we get a blast on one of these emergency things from the National Weather Service, just looking at meteorologists on the local news or national news, I don't know what's going to happen. They will say,
right,
it's going to be golf ball size hail. Well, when they start naming the cities are nowhere near where I live. I think,
right,
maybe the coverage, when you look at a local broadcast, in my opinion, you're expecting local news, local weather, and to a degree local,
right,
sports. But it seems like they want to take in so many areas, and I guess they're in those markets. Perhaps the markets have done like the newspapers, the TV stations have gone away. And that happened in everything. I know when I first started working for South Central Bell Telephone Company, there were like little telephone company offices in every little crook and cranny of Mississippi. And a lot of those offices had closed, even larger towns like Hazelhurst, Brookhaven, Morton, Canton. And those calls were being handled by Jackson. And people were coming to work, commuting to work from Yazoo City and faraway cities. So I guess the same thing is happening with TV stations, because in my opinion, we just have too many different cities under the weather coverage. I need to know what's specifically going to happen in the area where I live.
Right. And you're in the Metroplex, and so we get the same type of reports here in Metro Jackson area. But, literally, the meteorologists, I know on NBC and on ABC, and I love all our networks, the CBS, NBC, ABC, but literally they show the podcast sunny all week, also rain all week, except for,
mm-hmm,
I think, Monday. And the meteorologist literally stated rain, but I don't know what area. So just be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah,
okay.
We get some forecast. And like I said, they'll be talking about what's going on in Waco and Midlothian and Wichita Falls. And I'm like, okay, so what's happening in Dallas? And,
right,
of course, we get a lot of Fort Worth news and weather. And I think the Dallas stations are based over in Fort Worth. I know the ABC affiliate is in Dallas, because they tell you that they're broadcasting from the American Airlines Center. But the other ones be talking about Fort Worth, and we get a lot of information from what's going on in Fort Worth. And I said, that's fine for the people that live over there, but I live in Dallas. And I would like for you,
right,
to be a little bit more
and
specific.
You would think the broadcast would go for the Metroplex.
I guess that's considered Metroplex, Wichita Falls.
And you definitely live in the Metroplex. And you definitely live in the Connecticut.
Yeah.
So it should be Dallas and then spread out. just like here.
Oh, and what gets me is a 20% chance that it will rain. And I said, well, that's an 80% chance that it won't rain. So who are you,
right,
talking to? And why do we need to know there's a 20% chance of rain? I don't understand the weather forecast these days. I really don't. I just take my chances. I keep two umbrellas on the back seat of my car.
Right.
And I have about four or five umbrellas in my trunk. And I don't know. I couldn't tell you how many I have in my apartment, a gazillion.
Exactly. Right. So,
and I keep rain shoes in my car too.
Right.
So,
we have to understand some form of rain gear, even when it's 100% sunshine. Because Friday, that storm that came out of nowhere. I mean, that was not even predicted, and it lasted like 30 minutes, but it knocked your friend's power off, and it delayed. That was one of the reasons I delayed the show, because I'm like, this is crazy, and it came out of nowhere, sunny, and then it just started storming, literally storming, not sprinkling.
Wow. And remember when they were bragging about Doppler radar? I don't even hear them talking about Doppler radar anymore, because that was supposed to really be accurate. And so now I'm like, I'll look and see what's going on before I decide to go out to my car. I'm like, okay, it's sunshine, but as I stated, I have plenty of umbrellas in my car and in my trunk. And if it's sunshiny, fine. If it rains, I'm prepared for that too.
Right. So I must commend our meteorologists. Thank you all for reporting on a national level, because I love doing. I don't know what morning you listen to. You watch CBS this morning.
No, I watch.
I know ABC
in the morning. Yeah.
I know Good Morning America morning team is amazing. I mean, ABC sports team is amazing. You know, I love the other networks, but I predominantly watch ABC, I must admit. And I just, Rob Marciano and the crew, they just doing a great job. And
I love their reporters too.
Right, they're really great. And so, and then on the local level, when things start to happen, as soon as they really find out something is happening, they are on it. But I'm with you, with the state-of-the-art equipment, and I know God is in control, but you would think they would be able to predict it better.
Well, that's
and it would save more lives also. And people, we need to take it more seriously, too, because these storms are deadly. Some of us don't take it seriously. I know you and I do, but some people don't take these warnings seriously, and you all definitely take these storms seriously.
Especially with the
lightning.
And
this hot weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And this hot weather. Stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about drinking Gatorade and beer. Right.
They do give a lot of tips on how to stay hydrated and what time of day it's safe to go out and what time it isn't. However, people aren't listening, at least the ones over here where I am. They still like to be out at 12. Walking and jogging for whatever reason, I don't know.
Right.
I just know I can't, I'm not comfortable in that kind of heat.
I love summer and hot weather, but I know it can kill us. So it's definitely important to use our own common sense and listen to the reports when they tell us it's a heat advisor.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, because I've seen reports, I mentioned it the other day, many people have died in Mexico from this heat. Hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
It was 112 on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know, wow. And I don't know. I don't know how many have died. Wait, I think maybe 16 have died. I know there's been some deaths here in America, too, in our regions, in your region, and I haven't heard any deaths here in Mississippi, but I have heard of some deaths here in America also from this heat.
Yeah, a lot of them, unfortunately, come from people who don't have air conditioning, especially senior citizens. And you see a lot of people and organizations donate fans, but fans can't do anything, really, with this heat.
Right.
They do have
mobile air conditioning.
Yeah, they blow hot air. But there are mobile air conditioning units, and they're not real expensive either. I think you can get some for maybe $125, $150. I know when my air conditioning, the central air in my apartment went out, I think 2 summers ago, they brought in a portable unit that they put in the living room, and it kept the entire apartment cool. And they didn't have to install anything in the window. But your fans, I guess, you know, it's a nice gesture and everything, but you need more than a fan for this heat.
Right, right. That's why when people didn't have power, and I think some people still don't have power from those storms a couple weeks ago. Because I guess because of the heat advisory, we still have many cooling stations and many are opening up also. So I guess that would be going on for the entire summer. I guess I'm sure that's happening in Texas too.
Yes, they.
But you're right. People like to be in the comfort of their own home. And then some, even for the homeless people, I think it's hard to get them off the street. They come in and cool off and eat and rest.
And they were saying, you know, they named the locations of these cooling centers, and I'm like, if you don't have transportation to get to one, that's really not helpful.
Right. Are you picking up? Yeah,
I
think like some of these shuttle companies would like volunteer their time to at least pick up people that need transportation.
It seems like maybe the city should start planning for this as early as March, because you know we start getting hot weather as early as March and sometimes February.
Right. Right.
So start making preparations early in the year and don't just wait until the super, super hot weather has, you know, descended upon us. And look out for the elderly.
Right. And the babies and the pets.
Yeah,
right, because I get on my pets. I get on these pets. I'm like, you all drink your water, fresh water. Drink your water. Don't just look at it. You have to stay hydrated. They look at mommy like, what? You got to drink the water. It's hot. And so they're drinking the water. So that pets got to drink. Keep our pets cool. Even if you see homeless animals, you all take care of them. Put them in a safe place. Take them to a no-kill shelter or try to direct them to a safe environment so they can be comfortable.
Yeah. Do you all still have the Mississippi Animal Rescue League?
Yes. We still have Mississippi Animal Rescue League, and we have Kara, who I have volunteered for before, and we have ARC, who I'm a big supporter of, Animal Rescue Fund, Miss Elizabeth Jackson. But the city pound closed down 2 years ago, and we definitely need the facility needs, again, Cousin Linda, there's something else, and that it needs repairs, and they closed it down. So you know the city need a pound, Animal Service Department. Because we don't have an Animal Service Department, that is really heavy on mall. Mississippi Animal Rescue League. The director, longtime director, I can't, her name, I took my tongue, was on the news recently talking about how they're just, you know, overpopulated with animals and they have to turn pets away and so on. So, wow. That's something I would love for us to do when we can, you know, open a no-kill shelter and, you know, get some of the best people that love animals to work there and help, because that's sad.
And for people,
that's sad.
For people who say they love cats and dogs and they go purchase them or adopt them, make sure you love that animal, because my friend that lives here, she had three active little cute dogs with human names like Audrey and stuff. And she said they were her daughter's dogs. Her daughter lives with her. And whenever I would talk to her on the phone, Audrey and the two others would just be carrying on ridiculous, just barking at cute little dogs like those little breeds that Joan Rivers had. Some kind of little terriers. But anyway, we had been talking. I didn't hear Audrey and crew. And so I remember to ask, I said, well, then what happened to Audrey and the other dogs? Girl, I got rid of them. And I said,
well, what did she do with them? Where did she take them? I hope they didn't get euthanized.
I don't know. I don't understand how you can just say, I got rid of them.
Because when people say, I got rid of them, they're like, whatever, I got rid of them.
Yeah, because there's no way in the world I could say I just got rid of my animals, my pets. And so I was like, well, what happened? Well, they were just getting on my nerve. And all of a sudden she was saying her daughter had got to the point where she didn't like the dogs anymore. And I'm saying,
wow.
How does this happen? You know how animals are, or you should know before you decide to go get them and bring them into your home. So, people, if you're not going to have the patience, because God knows it takes love and patience to deal with these animals' personalities, which I think are cute.
Right.
Because I see some of my Facebook friends, their pets are just far rotten, and I just love it. Because my friend Maggie, she has a pet. Well, it's really her daughter's dog. She got the little dog named Peanut for her daughter.
Uh-huh.
Peanut is rotten. Everything you can think of that a dog would have, Peanut has it. I think he probably has two or three beds. He has all the
toys. He's a new version of Henri, huh, Cousin Linda?
Yeah.
He's a new version of Henri.
Yes. Peanut is the apple of their eye. And
well, my sister can't stand my Jack Russell Terrier Salt Bay. She's like, he's just rotten. And she's back there with her puppy who... is here named Nico, who's a little child, but that my sister claimed that Salt Bay is rotten.
And they should be rotten. I mean, they bring you such pleasure, and in the words of Alicia Keys, you bring me so much pleasure and you bring me so much pain. Yeah, because I'm really used to knock my trash over and then throw it across the apartment. But I just loved it. You know, I'd be hurt for an hour or two, but you get over it because the way they look at you with those little eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they love you. So how can you just up and she said that she had called the city of Dallas to come pick them up, and they said, well, they, you know, didn't have any way to do that, that she needed to bring the dogs to them. And she said she argued with the woman and told her she didn't have any way to get the dogs to the city. You know, come out here and you get them. And she said, and they sent somebody to pick them up. And I said, I don't see how you could be that cruel. How can you just
do euthanize? So I hope one of the workers, but they do try to put them up for adoption. So it sounded like they were some adorable pets. So they're probably in a beautiful home, but. Yeah,
and they're
probably pets. It sounds like those pets love them to death too. They were expressing their love.
When you have three dogs, that doesn't mean they're going to all get adopted together. And they grieve for each other. People don't realize that pets grieve. They grieve
for
their owners or masters, whatever you call yourself, and they grieve for each other.
Right.
So I don't know. My heart just wouldn't let me do it. So, and you know,
I posted a picture of you and Henri on the promo, and I said to myself, I post this picture often. I don't think we're talking about pets today, but God was like, you're all talking about pets today. Like, God knew, post that picture, Cousin Linda and Henri, because if you look at the promo, you and Henri up there on the promo today.
Oh, okay. I had no idea. But when we were talking about take care of your pets, because they can't just up and survive this heat. It's just too hot.
Right.
And I know everybody's dog is not a house dog. So if you have one outside, don't chain him to a tree. Let him run freely. And when he gets so hot, he can go over there and get shade in the tree. And you know, put ice cubes in the water because that water can get super hot, and make sure there are no bugs and other insects around.
And many of us here in Jackson, we give our pets bottled water, but some people are like, they're drinking that tap water. Or they're not drinking my bottled water.
No, if you can't, give them bottled water.
Right. Or at least bottled water.
Yeah, if you're not going to treat those pets like they're family members, which they are, leave them where they are. Don't go get a pet and bring him home and then 6 months later decide that you're pulling your hair out and you just can't handle it. And, you know, people take them off. They were showing on the news how there's a certain place in Dallas where people would take their pets, their dogs, and force them out of the vehicle and then drive down the street with the poor dog running behind the car.
Oh, my God. That story recently that made national news of the man that dropped the dog off on the road in Dallas, somewhere in Dallas. I know that. I forgot what area, but I know that area. And then the dog just chased in the car. But I think they found him and they arrested him. Yeah.
And they chewed it because that's animal cruelty.
And they say that's an area where a lot of people do that. That's what the animal shelters. Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. But, yeah, so unwanted pets here in Jackson, because most of the no-kill shelters are packed and mall, they can't accept any animals. Something happened where some loose pits in this neighborhood, you probably posted this story a few weeks ago, where an irresponsible pit bull owner, pit bulls always terrorize the neighborhood. And a lady got injured badly, almost died.
Mm-hmm.
And even the reporters didn't know if she died or not, because that's not a story like suicide that they report on the news. So when they went to, that's why Maul was on the news. The news reporter went to Maul to ask them if they were, did they euthanize the dog or the dogs, or how was the lady doing? And I don't know if they euthanized the dog or even if they had gotten the dog. Do you know if they had gotten the dog or not?
No, I don't. I don't remember.
Right.
But I remember
they said that they believed the victim was still alive because they had not received any reports that someone had died from a pit bull. So they said the victim must have been still in the hospital and might still be in the hospital. But the APT News was very concerned about what happened to the dogs, and then she was just saying that it's very hard because their hands are tied, you know, with accepting dogs, and they have to turn away dogs.
Yeah, and you know, right. I'm not a pit bull fan. If it were left up to me, there would be no pit bulls, and I know that's going to upset a lot of listeners who like that breed. But if you don't raise that breed to be a docile, loving animal, I think instinctively they're vicious because that's probably what they're bred to be. And a lot of people in Dallas bring pit bulls to fight them, which is a horrible thing to do.
And my neighbors have a yard full out back. I'm looking in their yard now.
And that's scary because they can dig under fences. Right. They jump fences. They can get out and attack. And Beth, you be very careful and don't let your animals out there because
my pets are in the backyard. Salt Bay and Nico, they're in the backyard. But look, but you're right. They can be really friendly, but they would snap on you. I don't know if you remember my friend Starboy, who wrote that song about me a few years ago, Pretty Lady. That's why his name is Scar. That's because when he was like 7 years old, the friendly pit bull tried to attack his baby sister, and he jumped in front of his little sister to save her from their lovely pet, and he nearly died and lost his life. That dog tore him up. He almost lost his life saving his sister from the friendly pet. And you're right. There's other pet advocates that I'm dear friends with that they advocate, you know, adopt a pit bull. You know, adopt a pit bull. They're really friendly. They can be, but they can snap on you too. They would snap on you. Once I was walking like 5 years ago It was right before I came to Dallas to school, and I was walking, and these neighbors, they didn't chain their pit bull up. They let her roam in the yard, and she was a puppy, but she was ferocious. And it's something about me that she didn't like. I don't know if she chased other people, but thank God this lady passed by in the nick of time. That dog was looking me straight in the eye, and she was getting ready to just, I guess, go for my neck, go for my chest area. Mm. This woman came out the blue. She slung her door open. Get in this car now! Seeing that dog getting ready to literally jump up at my neck. Get in the car!
That seems like God.
And I got in the car. I was like, that. Ooh, she saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like certain breeds. I'm afraid of pit bulls and Rottweilers. And, I mean, little dogs will attack you, you know. But it's not much they can do. You can kind of handle a small dog. You might be able to kick him or something. But a pit bull, and once they lock down on you, all they know is to kill. And if, like I said, if that's what you're breeding them for, but now I've had coworkers who say their dog, their pit bulls are just so sweet and lovable, and I'm like you, Bethia, yeah, sometimes they will snap.
My niece has a beautiful pit bull. My brother has a beautiful pit bull, a brother to that. And he even had, before I got Salt Bae, who is a Jack Russell, and they're very hyper because, you know, my other dog was a Jack Russell, BJ. But my brother said he had a pit bull for me. And a couple of weeks ago he told me that, you know, when I got the other dog, and I think my sister had told him, they had enough, you know, not to give me the dog to me. But I know when I showed them Salt Bae, he was like, I have a dog for you. I have a pit bull for you. And I was like, I really want a pit bull. But you're right.
No.
God worked it out perfectly where I got the dogs, the pets that I really deserve and need, and they can visit. You know, if I had a pit bull, you would be like, don't you bring that pit bull here. But Salt Bae, Salt Bae ain't like Henri. But, right. And some people just do not. You're right. You have to be safe around these animals. So that's a topic we need to talk about more, about dogs that are safe and not safe.
Your cousin Don had invited my friend Laverne and I over to his house because I had mentioned we wanted to go to the casinos in Mississippi. And he was saying we could stay with him. And I said, no, because he has a pit bull. And he was saying, how lovable she is. Now, he forgot he told me she was a watchdog, and she would let him know if anybody pulled up unannounced and this and that. And, and he was saying that we could stay with him. I said, no, I don't stay with anybody who has a pit bull. I'm leery of dogs anyway, unless they're little bitty ones.
Right.
And he went on to tell me how friendly they were, his dog was, and what have you. And I said, no, I just don't do pit bull. I don't care how friendly they are. They're friendly to you. They don't know me, so I'm not going to put myself in that situation. I said, I appreciate the offer, but if we came over, we'd stay at a hotel. And we want to be down on the coast anyway, because he doesn't live Highway 90 or I-10 or anything.
Right.
He lives at 49. And I said, that wouldn't be convenient for us. But when he was talking about this pit bull, I was like, there ain't no way in the world. And my friend said, no, she wouldn't want to stay there either.
Right. Wow. Right. We have to be careful. So you all, and then this is 4th of July. I have been, like, really watching my pets and the pets on the street with these fireworks. Oh, my God, you know, that's scare pets. And sometimes pets run away. So you all definitely watch your pets and keep them safe. You might think, it's nothing, but keep them safe.
It really bothers me. There were quite a few cartoons on Facebook this leading up to the 4th of July about how pets were buying earplugs and pets were going out of town. They showed some dogs that were at the counter at the airport, and one said, I want to go anywhere. The 4th of July is not celebrated. And the news people have been getting tips, too, on that noise
right.
really disturbs your dog. And Kaboom Town woke me up last night, kabooming all over the place. So...
But my neighbors, you would think we had a city event going on in the neighborhood, because there, I mean, major fireworks everywhere. I thought fireworks were illegal in certain areas, but apparently
they
not.
Are. Well, they are, unless it's done, you know, professionally or something. But, yeah, just individuals having fireworks and setting them off. That's illegal in the city, and I didn't realize sparklers were so dangerous. I was watching a piece on the news where you know you don't think anything about giving children sparklers, but they were saying, I forget the percentage, but it's
really?
A real high percentage of how many children get burned handling sparklers. So if I were into fireworks, I'd just go somewhere like Kaboom Town and all the other places that the city sponsor or private businesses sponsor, or look at them on TV.
Right. Brother Warren had called, but either he hung up or the call dropped. I would try to text him and ask him to call us back in. Call us back. I'm trying to type his number and talking at the same time. But yeah, wow. So yeah, people are like, So it's big business too to be in the fireworks business. Cause
it is.
That's big business. Whoa.
Yeah, a couple of businesses on the outskirts of Dallas got rained out one day. I mean, it just poured a torrential downpour over at that area. And they spoke to one of the owners, one of the vendors, who was saying that if everything dried out, like in the next day or so, they would still be able to sell a lot of their fireworks. But yeah, it's a lot of money being made. Firework industry. Yeah, I don't have any problem, you know, like I said, if that's what people like, and as long as it's safe.
Wow. Wow. So do you have any comments about America's birthday, Cousin Linda?
No, I don't.
Independence Day.
I posted an article from Aisha.com, the Jewish website, regarding how Frederick Douglass started out feeling the way that I do, but in the end he changed his mind and he thinks it's a good thing for us to celebrate the 4th of July. And I would say we agree to disagree. I don't feel the
and
freedom.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just
you
don't
feel
say,
the
I
freedom.
Feel
I want you to share, because I'm going to be quiet.
Oh, I don't want to go on and hurt people's feelings, but I just, as a black person, I can't celebrate the 4th of July and be happy about it, because I'm still scarred by slavery, and I'm still scarred by the fact that when they drafted the Constitution, my people were 3/5 of a human. I don't even think they gave us 3/5. They probably just legislated that to make it sound good, but we were not seen as human. And I know that was a couple hundred years ago. However, looking at the way things are in this country, I think we're more divided than ever. And some people still don't see us as human. They control the company. Like the saying goes, he who owns the gold makes the rules. And those rules are not necessarily beneficial to our race. So I just, you know, don't see any reason to celebrate it. I mean, I love barbecue ribs, watermelon, and all the other accoutrements that go along with it. However, I'm not going to get a bunch of flags and stick them outside somewhere on my balcony and saying, Happy Birthday, America. Oh, okay, America, it's officially your birthday, and everybody's happy and hunky-dory, and the retailers are having sales again. They look
right.
for any excuse to have a sale to get
Many
their money.
Many people associated with the good barbecues, family gatherings, and woo-woo-woo. The sale.
Yeah, but you don't have to wait until the 4th of July to get with family. You could just pick
right.
a day. And like
exactly.
I said, the retailers look for any excuse to have a sale. You know,
exactly.
today is my birthday
August 11th, retailers. Let's have a Bethany's birthday sale.
They probably will. They'll have, oh, it rained yesterday. Come in and say 50% off. You don't know what the price is, but you get 50% off.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I just kind of see myself as a realist. Do we really need
right.
to buy all? How many big screen TVs do you need? Now, if I had a 7-bedroom house, I'd want a TV in every room. I admit that, but there comes a time when you
right.
get them, and TVs last forever these days, praise the Lord, since I don't have to keep buying them. But just how much stuff do you really need to accumulate? Because you're going to
right.
throw it away,
and that's been
and
the
that's
big
harmful
talk.
To the environment, huh?
And that's been the big talk, too, for the 4th of July sale and Prime Day that's coming up with Amazon TVs and mattresses and beds and all of that. But you make me think about when some critics mentioned during Black Friday and holiday shopping season, didn't you all just get, like, a big screen TV last year? What happened to that?
Well,
one?
That's what I'm saying. How many of them do you really need? I know Walmart has an 85-inch Vizio for $75, and Lord knows I would love to do that, go buy one. But I have two TVs. They may not be 85 inches, but I'm not going to get rid of a TV that's working just so I can say, well, I got this 85-inch. And then that's not going to be big enough. You know, pretty soon you're going to want a 120-inch screen. And I'm just not into it. I mean, I'm into consumerism if you need it. And
right.
I know this is, you know, what keeps retailers going. And I was going to say keep people in jobs.
And we love retail. You all know that. We love retail.
But
retailers
are looking for ways to get rid of humans. So I can't jump on the bandwagon of people constantly buying stuff because nearly everything now is self-checkout. And we know how I
and
feel about
self-checkout. And that's what I've always loved by working in retail. That's what I've always loved about working in retail management and sales. That's what my ass is in the end. That's why the human contact. So you're right. It
mm-hmm.
is hurtful for the human part of it to vanish, because that's what's so fun about retail. But that's what's really fun about retail, the salesmanship, the coming together, the consumer and the seller. That's what's fun about shopping. That's what's fun about shopping. That's what's fun
mm-hmm.
about the retail industry. And to take that human contact away from workers and from customers, it's got to be a better way for us to mix new technology with real humans. Yeah, because this morning I had to talk with T-Mobile because you know I paid my phone bill. Then I had got a message that something had happened with my phone bill, and then I sent my comment to the robot. To the AI, look, am I saying it right, AI, and then the AI couldn't mm-hmm. even deal with me. Because whatever I asked the AI, let me connect you with a human. Thank you very much. That's what I prefer anyway. And well, the human security, she was like, your payment went through. It was no problem with it. She was like, that's just your next due bill. And I'm like, okay, look, AI, I didn't want to talk to you in the first place.
Yeah, I hate the chat. When you have a question or you're trying to explain an issue that you're having, when they want you to troubleshoot, and, of course, the issues that I would be having didn't come up under the frequently asked questions, and I'm typing in my issue with the chat person, and they don't seem to know what I'm talking about, whereas if I could have spoken with a human initially and explained, but no matter, it seems like whatever you need, they want you to do a chat or go through some, like I said, robot or whatever. But back in retail, Bethany, remember when they used to have salespeople in every department? And then these CEOs came up with, well, you might work at the fragrance counter, but then the person that's over there in sneakers and sports equipment and every other department can bring this merchandise over to you so you can ring it up. Well, I like communicating with a salesperson so you can explain some things to me. So you can tell me the benefit of purchasing this tennis racket as opposed to that one, because this one may not be suited for me. It might be too heavy. And fragrances, where the salesperson would love to talk to you about fragrances and, you know, bring the testers out. But no, if you go pick it out and bring it over here and I'll ring it up to you. And I just didn't like that business model. And you see those stores have gone out of business.
Right. And because I know when I was a counter manager for Fashion Fair at McRae's, I mean, when I'm in my department, and I'm one of those people, I love to help everybody if you're in another department, but we are specialists when we're in certain departments. You're right.
Yeah.
So it's important to have specialist departments. Because if you come from the tennis racket department and I'm over here with a line of clients that want to know about their dry skin or what foundation matches their skin, they do not want me to be talking about a tennis racket to somebody else when I should be focused on them and giving them undivided attention with a skincare system. So you're right. And I don't know. These companies, even with the AI, got to get it right. Got to get it right.
All they think about is the bottom line. They're talking about, well, we got to make the stockholders some money, the shareholders. Well, what about your consumers? If it wasn't for consumers, these CEOs and shareholders wouldn't have any money. And when you're talking about skincare, I remember I used to have oily skin all my life up until my 25th birthday. It seems like it just dried up overnight. And I was working across the street from downtown McRae's, and so I went over to the counter, and the lady there, esthetician or whatever she was, recommended some Revlon for me. Well, Revlon just broke me out. And so I went back, and I went to the Estee Lauder counter because the lady was not at the Revlon counter. So I just happened to mosey over to Estee Lauder. And this lady, I'll never forget her name. I can see her face now, Edna.
I was telling Edna
what had happened with me and the Revlon products, and she said, oh, no, your type of skin can't use that. And she recommended three products by Estee Lauder, and I must have used Estee Lauder for about 35 years. That was the best cosmetic
brand. And Estee Lauder was the first department store brand, upscale brand, to make a skin line, because they were in competition. They were competing with Fashion Fair that was designed for women of color, too. So Estee Lauder, they were one of the first to trailblaze and say, hey, we need to help our women of color also.
I never would have thought of Estee Lauder, because when you tell me Estee Lauder, the first thing I thought about was Youth Do Fragrance. I had seen commercials or ads, but I just always thought it was for white women. And if Edna had been there, I probably would have gone and bought some other stuff that didn't work out and tried something else. But instead of me having to go through trial and error, And I sent quite a few people to Edna. I told a bunch of my coworkers, I said, go to McRae's and ask for Edna. You know, she'll hook you up. Right. She'll know what your skin issue is, and she knows what products will work best for you. So I miss that human contact. I think maybe the next closest thing, maybe Sephora, but I don't really think those are trained people. I just think that they're in there to, you know, kind of make some sales.
Yeah, really and they're influencers. They're influencers. I noticed that too. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not saying you don't love the business you are, but we're just saying the old school, you know, sales building and keeping the customer as a repeat customer and knowing their system. It's important to it takes time and patience. You have to have time and patience.
Remember when
and know your clients.
That Rolodex, when they had the Rolodex or their little black book of customers. Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you call the customer and say, well, we're going to be having a private sale or we got this in, I think you'll like it. You just don't get that anymore, maybe unless you're shopping at Neiman's or Saks Fifth Avenue or something. But just the average customer, because I mean, I don't do a lot of high-end shopping like I used to. I'm over that, but I just need what is going to take care of whatever need I have at the current time. But I do
You miss what?
What? Oh, I was just going to say I really
miss
do miss the fun days of retail because I would go in and look for my salesperson.
Right.
And, you know, you want a salesperson to get a commission.
And it was just like a party, and I loved it. Like a client would call, like Edna, a client would call me and say, girl, I'm almost out of my moisturizer. She wouldn't even have to tell me what type of moisturizer because I would either remember it or I will go to my Rolodex, my client book. And I have the entire system written down that she's on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, just come pick it up, or do you want us to mail it to you, or, you know, or you just come pick it up already. Right, and hey, are you having, and I have an event. I'm going on vacation. You're right. Come on in and schedule a makeover. And let's do this.
Excellent.
So you're right. It was just so enthusiastic and so much fun. I've been having a ball watching a stylist that's from Jackson. It's in Dallas. He moved from Jackson like 6 years ago, and he is just booming nationally and internationally, Cousin Linda. You might see I post Jay Bolin often. He was based here. He's in Big D, and he have A-list clients galore. But you know what I've noticed, and you're going to notice it when you watch more of him, more of his videos. I've tagged you. What we're talking about.
Okay.
Salesmanship. Enthusiasm.
Yeah, because
whatever industry you're in, it's important to be enthusiastic. That's why we love car salesmen, because they're enthusiastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, because some salespeople are so good, they'll have you buying stuff you don't want. You know, they can convince you that you need it, and you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe I do. Then you get the
stuff. Yeah, I'm
that
kind of me. I'm
like,
but I try to make sure it's something they want and need, but I have the whole family decked out.
Yeah, but I'm like, a lot of times they made suggestions on stuff that I hadn't even thought about, but I ended up liking it.
I didn't even know I needed this, but I need this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Right. So, yes, we must continue on talking about customer service because hopefully some of these businesses will get it and see. We're talking about corporations, too. Stop taking away the people. Some kind of way, let's make it work where we work together. But yeah, I felt very good that I asked that AI to solve a problem of mine that it could not solve. Because really, none of those AIs can solve problems. Very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
I usually need to talk to a human in person, chat, or on the phone. I need to talk to a human.
I need a human. Bottom line, case closed. I need a human.
Even if it's a yes or no question, I need to talk to a human.
They may not be the friendliest human in the world, but at least
right.
we can communicate. We speak the same language because I don't speak AI. And I don't feel like typing and chatting and carrying on. You know, I'm a baby boomer. I'm not one of those Gen Xers who likes to chat and text
well,
and
I'm
all
a Gen
that.
Xer, and I like human contact. Right. And if I'm going to be texting, I want to text with a human.
I
want
to talk to a human.
Right. Mm-hmm. Me too. It seems like the problem gets solved quicker, too, when you talk to the human. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing to...
Oh,
sorry, AI.
Something else, when you go to the movies, you know, they have the kiosk outside or either on the inside of the theater, so you can just get your ticket. Nope, I go over there to that person, and they
right.
don't always have a person over there, but I start looking around, and then they'll send somebody over there to sell me a ticket. I just
right.
like talking to people. I want some human contact. And then you've got certain generations, you know, who are independent. They don't need to be babysat and coached and carried through every transaction, but I do. And I would still like the option to be able to do that.
Right. So I hope you all are listening, and we're representing many shoppers, not just in America, but internationally, like that good,
mm-hmm.
good person-to-person contact. You know what? And we talk about this, and you've been to, when you were at Nurseret, you and your friends, just for me watching how Saul Bay and just how his staff, when he's not at the location, I noticed that the food is not just good to most, like you gave it a good review, but I noticed that might be the secret also to Salt Bay's restaurant success, good customer service.
Mm-hmm. You know, I told you how nice they were to us. The little hostesses that met us at the door were just so sweet and friendly, and I mentioned that we had reservations and everything and that we were waiting for two more people to come. And they was, well, would you like to walk around the restaurant? You want to take pictures?
Oh,
sure. I'm
beautiful.
Like, we can do that? Oh, yeah, sure. You can take pictures of everything. You know, just be comfortable.
Some places you cannot take pictures. Some places you cannot take pictures. Photographs are not allowed. Right.
And with the prices of that restaurant, you know, I felt a little, they might not be real welcoming. But no, they weren't snooty at all. And it's like you don't have to
right.
dress up. Now, maybe for dinner you might want to put on your finest or whatever, but we were there for lunch on a Saturday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And it was very casual, and the wait staff was friendly, and especially when they brought the baklava out, the dessert, they put on a show.
Uh-huh.
That was a performance for us buying some $50 hamburger type thing. I mean, you would have thought we
right.
were getting the $3,000 gold steak. The service was so good. It was not this, oh, my goodness, they ain't spending but X number of dollars.
Right,
we ain't
right.
going to get no big tip.
And retailers and restaurants, you know that's how you do. Because you and I work
see,
with companies like that. I got
that's
big sales
old,
that way. Right.
I had waiters I've had former waiters tell me when they see black women coming in, they don't even want to wait on us. And you know, and anyway, I don't give them the best service because they don't tip. I said, did you ever think that the reason you get a lousy tip or no tip is because you provided lousy service? I said, I'm a black woman,
right.
and I really tip well. And so do my friends.
And I become,
so if you give us good service,
and,
you get
and you all are wrong, because black women happen to tip very well. I know, because I am one. But black women happen to tip very well when they get the service that they deserve.
Yeah.
Now,
they,
the service not good, that's a whole nother story.
I couldn't get them to understand. I'm like, it's so simple and basic. Why don't you see this? Because, you know, you come in and the server sees somebody all decked out with the Rolex flashing and $2,000 suit and whatever, and you think you're going to get a real good tip, and they don't tip you. Because I'm told that some celebrities are notorious for not leaving a decent tip and are rude.
And when we talked about tips, there was something I wanted us to talk about, too. Like there are some people that are known not to be very good tippers. You would think people would run to their table, but they will go the other way because they know they're not good tippers. But I have become very successful in sales working for different companies because of coworkers and even some managers say, oh, they're not going to buy anything, and they turn their nose and go the other way. Then I'm like, I'm going to help them anyway. Then it's like that scene from Pretty Woman, you know, like you and I were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You missed out on that sale. Then when they see I'm ringing up thousands of dollars, I thought that person wasn't going to buy anything, but maybe a accessory or something small, if anything. And even if people window shop. I'm a window shopper, too. I will go and buy. But people, if you help people, they will remember you. And you show people, like you were saying, show people specials and what's new. Then when they come back, they would ask, where's Linda? When I came in, she was so nice to me. She showed me things. I told her I weren't going to buy anything, but I was just looking, and she still treated me as if I was a paying customer. Where is she?
You still help people. The incident where when I was at Frost Brothers and I was doing undercover security, a bus dropped a busload of Japanese tourists at Frost Brothers. And they weren't getting waited on by some of the people. And so I went to this young lady named Cindy, and I said, Cindy, I said, why don't you go over and see if you can assist, you know, some of these customers? Oh, they just going to say, just looking. I said, that might be the only English words they know is just looking. And I'll never forget, it was this salesperson that everybody hated, Chris Collick, except me. I love Chris. Chris waited on everybody under the sun because he said you can't judge a book by its cover, and that is so true.
Me.
So I just went and got, you know, and I would, when I would see a salesperson and nobody was helping them, I'd go tell Chris, and they want to know, well, why are you always telling Chris? Because he's not stuck up. He will wait on anybody. And so I just went over and told him, I said, Chris, I said, there's a lot of Japanese tourists in here that need assistance. And he waited on a bunch of them and got a huge amount of sales. Because they came in to buy Gucci, because at that time, Frost Brothers was the only store in Dallas that sold Gucci. They had a Gucci salon.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then the other people wanted to get jealous. And I said, well, you know, I mentioned that
he was dancing to the bank. He was dancing to the bank on that one, and everybody else missed
and
out.
And he was so good that he got Cartier, some headhunters contacted him to be the sales manager of the Cartier store in Beverly Hills. So, which I was not the least bit surprised. And then he transferred, a couple of years later, he transferred back to Dallas and was the manager at the Cartier store at the Galleria in Dallas. Because I just happened to be passing by one day because I had a Cartier watch at the time. And I love their fragrance. I think it's pronounced Le Must or Le Mousse or something, L-E-S-M-U-S-T. And I had gone in to get a new watch band and to get my perfume. And lo and behold, Chris was in there. And we were just so glad to see each other. So he did extremely well in retail.
Right.
Because he was a go-getter. And like he said, he will wait on anybody. He didn't care what race, how you look, or whatever. If you're in the store, you must have some money.
Even that person that never comes in and never buy anything. Oh, my coworker. I've had cohorts at different companies that didn't like them. Well, they always looking and never buy anything. Then when I ring up that big sale, thought you said she never buy anything.
Yeah, when I went in, when I went in the Cartier store, I didn't see Chris at first, and this salesperson of another race was behind the counter. And I could tell she, you know, when she saw me coming, she was kind of turning her nose up. And then just, I guess Chris spotted me because that's when he came toward me. And I was going toward him, like, to the counter. Because, like I said, I needed a watch band. And I wanted to get some fragrance. So I wasn't going to be in there pretending that, I'm going to buy some $200,000 earrings or whatever. And then when she found out that Chris, who me, that's when she just got super friendly. But if he hadn't been there, it wouldn't have been smooth sailing. Mm-mm. No.
Oh.
But that was one thing I didn't like about that watch. I had to buy a watch band every year. I don't know why the watch bands didn't last very long. They were crocodile. Yeah, but for some reason that little hole would expand and your watch would get loose. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, yes. So, this is the on-corn conversation. And some might say, well, how do they get on there talking about 4th of July? Because it's sales time. It's 4th of July.
Yeah.
Christmas in July shopping has started for those that Christmas in July shop. Some people get their Christmas shopping done before. Huh?
They don't wait for Thanksgiving Black Friday anymore. They start having Black Friday sales in June and July.
Right. And my goodness, why couldn't we let Black Friday stay in its place?
Because of greed, corporations
right.
want their stores to make more money. And I think another mistake CEOs made was by opening too many stores. You want to maintain that exclusivity. Now, I don't mean your Targets and your big box stores or whatever. I'm talking about your luxury retailers. Because I just think that Neiman Marcus opened too many stores. And, you know, Neiman's, I think they did go bankrupt at least once. But I remember I used to have to go to Bell Harbor, Florida, or Atlanta, Georgia, so I could use my Neiman Marcus card. I used to order from their catalogs all the time. But I wanted to shop in the Neiman Marcus store. That was back in my crazy days.
You're right.
That back exclusive.
Being exclusive, being an exclusive retailer in a certain area is good. But then they decided, oh, we're going to make ourselves available everywhere,
many
places.
They seemed like they were opening one in every state. And I remember some of the stores over here were so exclusive in Texas boutiques. Where they sold designer fashion, you know, your rich jet setters would fly in just to shop
as a fashion student. As a fashion student, my fashion teacher, my professor Hines, she used to be a buyer for Mac Rays, and so that's another reason why I love Dallas, you all, not because of my family and my kinfolk, because that's what we were taught back in the day, that New York, Atlanta, Miami, Los Angeles, and Dallas. New Orleans also, but Dallas, the mecca of the South, is one of the fashion meccas of the world.
Was number
three. And so it was exclusive, right? So that's what we were taught. You get to Dallas, baby.
It was New York, Los Angeles, and then Dallas. And Dallas had a lot of retailers right here. Because I remember Jarrell of Texas. I must have bought everything that they came out with at Lucille Hat Shop on Capitol Street, downtown Jackson. Because I don't know, I guess it was a Milner's shop, so it was called Lucille Hat Shop. But they sold dresses, the cutest dresses in the world. And back then they had layaway. And it looked like every time I would go in to pay on my layaway, I saw something else that I just had to. And these clothes would have that tag.
And in a buying more,
And like I said, the brand was Jarrell of Texas. And I never thought I'd be living in Dallas. I didn't even know where Jarrell was. I just knew it was in Texas. And then when I moved over here, I found out that they were actually located in Dallas. But I bought a lot of things that came out of Dallas, Texas. And then when I moved over here, I started seeing how just how big Dallas was in retail. And I really missed it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you wanted to shop, you did not have to go to Los Angeles or New York or whatever. You could find
exactly.
it here. And
that's what my fashion professor used to stress. You don't have to go to California. You don't have to go to New York. Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm. And I like, you mentioned New Orleans. I like shopping in New Orleans, too. They have
Me
a lot
too.
Of people.
I love shopping in New Orleans.
Yeah, because I used to love to go to D.H. Holmes and Godshaw's and Maison Blanche. Their main
right.
departments, especially Maison Blanche. They really had it
and
going
that's
on.
Still there, that's still there, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think all those stores went out of
And see, that's
I think.
What's sad. Exclusive stores like that. You look, and I don't know if you've seen my post, and that's something we need to talk about, too, as we talk about fashion. I posted several videos last week regarding catalogs, the catalog companies like Spiegel, you know, and retailers
oh
of hold down that we love to shop at. You know, I know Mother and I, we ordered from Spiegel like it was nobody's business. So many catalogs, and then I've even missed JCPenney's and Sears catalogs, but the catalog company.
Sears. You know, the Sears catalog used to be like, I don't want to say this, you know, the second coming or whatever, but that was something
the,
we
the
looked
show just
forward
ended.
To.
The show just ended, so it's just you, me, and BT and Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Yeah. The Sears catalog was a major event in people's lives. We looked
right.
for that catalog, honey, and JCPenney, but it was Sears. And, you know, and we love Spiegel, and my mama used to order from Alden's, another Chicago
uh-huh.
mail order house. And then there was one
uh-huh.
called National Bella's Hess. And I think they might have been out of Nebraska or somewhere. But, honey, if it was a mail order catalog, you better believe my mama was ordering from them.
Right, and I love yeah. Right, so I don't know. It's good that we have online shopping, but nothing like good catalogs. Also,
mm-hmm. yeah, you know that thing that you hold in your hand, or you could order
right.
you could order from the Sears catalog and have them deliver it to the store. Remember those days when you just
right.
go to the store and pick it up instead of having it shipped to your house.
Right, Sears and JCPenney's. I love that, going to the pickup
mm-hmm.
department.
And quality merchandise, because I was so mad when I was in school, my mama would get my school clothes and school shoes from Sears. Well, you can't tear up stuff from Sears. I'm like, I know. I want some new stuff. I don't want to have to wear this for the next 10 years. You could not tear up nothing that you bought at Sears. Because
That's
that quality
true.
Was there.
Quality.
And JCPenney, too. Mm-hmm. And JCPenney.
And JCPenney was good with not just quality, but also setting trends. I know I used to buy some of the most fabulous shoes from JCPenney. Oh, my
Me
God.
Too.
Shoes that you would think I bought in Dallas at the market. I mean,
mm-hmm.
whoa. And people would say, oh, where did you get those shoes? And they would come from JCPenney's.
Mm.
And a lot of times I would get them from the clearance book.
And JCPenney's stuff was a little more stylish and a little more up-to-date than Sears.
Right.
They were more fashionable.
But you're right. Mm-hmm. Those clothes held out quality.
Made in the United States. You know, remember the little commercial
exactly.
look for the universal? Because it was made in this country, made to fit our bodies, our sizes. A true 10 was a 10. A
right.
7 was a 7. You didn't have to guess at what size you wore.
Nowadays, we don't even know our sizes. Nowadays, we don't even know our sizes. But you're right. we knew our sizes, and we knew our sizes stayed consistent too with different brands.
Right. Yeah, it didn't matter what brand or what designer it was. Like I said, a 10 was a 10, no matter where you bought it, at the cheapest store or the most expensive store. That
right.
size was going to be a regular the size that you wore. And the same thing
right.
with shoes. I have a problem with shoes. I've gone from a size 7 to an 8.5. And sometimes
right.
8.5 is too tight. So shoes are something I don't like to order online.
Right, because I'm a perfect 6, but you're right now, 6.5, 7, even, you
mm-hmm.
know, 7.5. Like, whoa, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we could think
and
because we're getting older, but it's because of the way these brands and where they're made.
Because I was telling Aunt Mildred that I had ordered a sweatsuit, and I ordered it extra, extra large because, you know, if you order your size, it's going to fit maybe a 3-year-old child. So I
right.
got this sweatsuit extra,
that's
extra
what I was
large.
Thinking, a
I
size
said,
8. A 2 is not 8.
I said, I guess extra, extra large means extra, extra long arms. Because the clothes
uh-huh.
would still be too little for me, but the sleeves
wow.
would be down to my knees. And I said, well, that's the only
oh,
thing
I'm
I
glad
think
you brought that to my attention, because I was always thinking XXL means large, but long.
Well, it might,
why?
It might be large to the Vietnamese or the Chinese or whomever, but it don't mean I mean,
why?
The arms will be the long anything like maybe a tree branch or something. And
oh,
really? I don't know what size. And if I get I've never ordered the women's sizes, the W's and the whatever, but if I order like a 16, it'll be way too big in the waist and too tight in the butt. And I'm saying, well, who are they designing these clothes for? This just ain't making sense. Because I don't think my butt is that big. But if I need to get something to fit my hips, you know, to come up my thighs and fit my hips, I'm going to have to order like a 16 or 18. And then like
uh-huh.
if the waist is too big and then it's too long, give up. I just lost all interest. Number one, I don't really go anywhere to wear clothes. But from
right.
time to time,
but when
you know,
we wear
I
clothes,
will...
we want it to fit and look good. Right.
Because mm-hmm, I went to this event for the Cancer Society with a friend of mine, a few, I think maybe back in May. And I had
yeah, you told me
the
Kentucky Derby theme event.
Yeah. And so I had ordered some dresses several years ago that I took to Dubai with me and didn't get a chance to wear them. But I said, well, I've got this little outfit. Let me pull it out, the little jacket and dress. And they're just too big. And I said, well, and I had even had that particular outfit taken up, and the woman that did the alterations didn't really do a good job. And so I've gained weight over the years, and I said, well, maybe since I've put on maybe 10 extra pounds, this will fit. It's still too big. And I said, why I don't wear these clothes, because they just don't fit. And you'll see, you know, the label is
wow.
made in China. Made,
and
made
you make
in,
a good point. Back in the day, U.S. made, it was like we were models. We knew if we wore
mm-hmm.
certain signs, if we put it on, it looked good on us. Adult
mm-hmm.
or child.
It was like the super rich women had their mannequin, as they call it, at their designers, where the designers
right.
would fit their clothes and hand make the clothes or whatever. But that mannequin, it's like these women never gained an ounce. And it was just
right.
always perfect. And it was the same when our clothes were coming from the garment district in New York or over here in Dallas or
mm-hmm.
California. The sizes were standard because, you know, you could look and see, okay, if you wear a size 4, well, that means the bust is 28, the waist is probably
mm-hmm.
20, and the hips are probably right. going to be 30. And that was
right.
the standard. Now, child, it's hit or miss. This might fit you in, it might not. And most of the time,
because I know
doesn't.
If you knew my signs, I know when you would travel and you would send something back for me, you would convert my signs. Because I know back then I was probably like a 4, and you would you would convert a 6, and you would convert my signs to wherever you were to their size. And it would fit perfectly. Now, oh, my God. How can we convert anything when we don't even know our true sizes?
Right, because clothes made in China are different from clothes made in Bangladesh, Vietnam. But
right.
they all have their standard of measurement.
And like you make that point, American-made. I mean, you could convert. Okay, best American size is 6, but this Bangladesh size is so. So now everything's all screwed up. We don't know what to do.
Because your clothes might be made in Guatemala. They might
right.
be made in something you ain't never heard of. And these are tiny people.
My neighbor next door, his lady, his wife, she looked like a child. My little nieces and I, we thought she was a child. Wait a second, 7. Trying to hang this. Okay, are you on? She looked like a child.
Uh-huh.
You're right. She looked like a child, but she's a grown woman. And my nieces said, oh, well, I guess he sent for her because they have a little baby, and so... the Latinos from Guatemala and Mexico live next door, and they work hard. And so I guess after she had he sent for the baby, she and the baby, after he earned enough money. So the girls, my great nieces, mentioned to me, that lady, that his wife looked like a little girl. She looked like us, like a little child. And I'm like, you're right. I noticed that too. She looked like a child, but she's a grown woman. But she looked like she is 11.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my first trip to Hong Kong, and I was a perfect 7 when I went to Hong Kong my first time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know I could barely find some clothes to fit me? Because when I would go in the store and ask the salespeople for a size 7, and they say US 7, and I say, yeah, no size big enough, no size. And I'm telling them, y'all even a 7? But when you look and see them, they were tiny people. Now every now and then you run across maybe a Korean or somebody, because you see some tall Korean women. But a lot of
right.
Chinese, if they've never left China, they're little people. They
right.
are little people. And you'll see them here in the United
yeah.
States.
Yeah, my Taiwanese friends here, you know, that I do business with, and, you know, we consider them friends, you know, even though I do business with them, they are tiny. Tiny, but they can eat a lot too. But you know, I guess their menus are healthier and not don't have as many calories.
The portions are smaller because I think this was probably my third trip to Hong Kong, and I met this really
mm-hmm.
really nice Chinese lady, and we
mm-hmm.
just hooked up. I was at a mall next door to the hotel where I was staying. And I was looking in the restaurant window, looking at the menu, and this lady passed by, and she said, ooh, that looks good, doesn't it? And I said, yeah, it does. And you know, I was traveling alone, and she said, well, why don't we go in and eat? And I said, well, okay. And I had no intentions of going in that particular restaurant, but the fact that
right.
I had some company. And she was an attractive lady, looked like she might have been my age or whatever. And so we went in, and... I was looking at stuff on the menu, and she was telling me that, you know, because a lot of it was written in the native languages, and she could even read Vietnamese. And so we ordered, and I got some nice dishes or whatever, kind of like at her suggestion. And she said, well, tomorrow, because she was a jewelry designer and she lived in Chicago, and she told me she was going to be at this certain jewelry store and to come by. So I went to the jewelry store, but it was way too expensive for me. And then she told me that her brother was going to fly up from Taiwan, and she had some cousins that lived in Hong Kong, and they wanted to take me to dinner. And I was like, well, okay. So when they met me at my hotel, which was the Regent Hotel, which was across the street from the peninsula, I think the Regent Hotel was rated number 3 as one of the best in the world. And so when they met me and they were trying to figure out where they were going to go to, because they wanted to go to a nice restaurant. And so somebody in the party suggested, she said, well, she said that they're saying that the hotel that, I mean, the restaurant here at your hotel is a really fine restaurant. And I'm like, okay, I didn't even breakfast there. Yeah, and I didn't even know it was rated as one of the best restaurants in the world, which I didn't know.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking. They're probably thinking she's at a nice hotel, so she definitely needs to go to a nice restaurant, too.
Well, and they had money, honey. They were accustomed to high-end spending. So anyway, make a long story short, we were in the restaurant, so I thought everybody was going to order individually, so I was looking at the menu, and her brother spoke a little English. Her uncles or somebody else, two Chinese men, didn't speak any English, but her cousin spoke English, and she spoke fluent English. And, you know, so we were communicating that way, translating and stuff. And she told me, she said that we would order for everybody. I'm like, okay, so I'm thinking I'm going to be eating some stuff I don't want. Girl, they kept bringing out dish after dish after dish after dish. But like I said, the portions were very small. And then they brought out this huge fish, and they had cut the fish in, I think it was about 6 of us. And so they had cut the fish in 6 pieces. And so my friend that I had made, she told me, you know, I guess this was culture. She said, Linda, my brother and my cousin want the head, and she said you can't have the head of the fish. And I said, because fish head is very big over there. That's like getting a salt bait.
Yeah,
that's like getting a salt bait. Girl, I ain't been want no fish head. I didn't want no fish head because you know they had the eyes and the mouth on them and everything. So that was right down my alley not to get the fish head. So I told her, I said,
that's funny the way she said it to you. That's funny.
Yeah,
like, I love this chicken breast. All y'all know I love chicken breast. I want that chicken breast. But she said it to you like, you're not getting that chicken breast.
No, not chicken breast, Bethany. Fish head. A fish head. It wasn't a chicken.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I love chicken breast. So she was like telling you. It was funny the way you said it because it's like you might well want the fish head.
Yeah, she was kind of like taking me to the side I wouldn't make a faux pas.
I want that fish head. Y'all better share.
Yeah, because I think she was trying to help me to keep me from making a faux pas. And if I had asked for the fish head, they probably would have given me the fish head. But, you know, she kind of like took me to the side and said the fish head went to, I don't know if it was the oldest person or the person paying for the meal or whoever. It's kind of like, you ain't getting this fish head. But I said, okay, thank you. Thank you. Said to myself, babe, I don't even want no fish head. Not even. But anyway, I stopped counting the number of courses after about 17. Because I think we must have had about 20 or 21 courses. And you didn't feel just stuffed, even though all this food kept coming out. But,
I noticed my Taiwanese friends. They are tiny as ever, but they can eat a lot, so that's it, the portions.
Yeah,
that's what I'm working on.
Because a portion may not be but two or three bites. You know, when we say portion, that's about 6 or 8 ounces.
Right. Right.
But that's one.
That is funny. That's funny. You just have me laughing over here because I can just see your expression. Like,
I'm thinking to myself, I hope my thinking wasn't it showing as an expression on my face. Because, like I said, baby, the fish head, that's the last piece I want is a head. And I know when I don't know if it was the next, it must have been the next year that I went to Hong Kong and Singapore. And in Singapore, I just happened to be in my hotel room watching TV. And Singapore is right there next to Malaysia. And the Malays kind of, they think that they are a little bit above the Singaporeans. So anyway, I was watching this cooking show, and this Malay lady in Singapore was saying that today's dish or whatever was going to be fish head soup. And I thought back to when I was in Hong Kong and that fish head, and I said, this fish head thing must really be
good. I hear a lot about your fish head soup and fish head. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, they used to call
me.
When the guys came home from Vietnam, they had labeled the Vietnamese as fish heads. And I said, huh, the back of their heads do kind of look like fish heads. And so I was calling them fish heads until I married Glenn, and he made me stop calling them fish heads and goops and stuff. But, I've learned that the fish head is, like I said, that's the equivalent of a $3,000 Salt Bay Gold steak. And later on, I was reading one of my W magazines where the restaurant was called Lai Chin Hing. And it was, that's when I found out that it was one of the top rated restaurants in the world. Now, I knew about the hotel, but I did not know that the restaurant was top of the
in the world. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I was going to stay at the Peninsula. That was the year that I went to, it might have been the same year when I went down to Singapore and they had fish head soup on TV. Because, I know I went to Hong Kong, Singapore, and Bangkok, Thailand. And I was staying at the top hotels in the world. I was going to, in Hong Kong, I was going to stay at the Peninsula. But the travel agent, my travel agent, was at Neiman Marcus. And so when I told her to book my reservation at the Peninsula, well, when I got to Neiman's to make my payment, she said, well, my manager said that the Regent is a way nicer hotel than the Peninsula. Well, at that time, the Peninsula was the number one hotel in the world, and the Regent was number two. And so I said, well, I've never stayed at either one of them, so I'm going to trust you and go ahead and stay at the Regent. And I know when me and Michael Payne had gone to Hong Kong, it was my second time and his first time. And you remember Robert Guillaume, the actor that played Benson?
Yes.
Okay, well, we ran into him. We were staying at the Sheraton. And, you know, these hotels have all these shops in them. And so I told Michael, I said, that looks like the actor Robert Guillaume. And so he turned his head like he didn't want to speak to us or something. And so later on, me and Michael were still shopping. We were mostly window shopping. And I saw him again. And this time I looked and he caught my attention and I caught his attention. And there was another guy with him. And so I guess this time he decided, well, I'm not going to ignore them. I'm going to go ahead and speak. And I said, Robert Guillaume, Benson. And so he, you know, went ahead and admitted who he was and everything. And I said, what are you all doing over here? I said, are you all filming over here? And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, my daddy has diamond mines over here. So we just laughed it off. And so
he really is from a wealthy family. Whoa.
Girl, he was lying. Ain't no diamond mines in Hong Kong.
Oh.
facetious. Yeah, and so that kind of broke the ice. So that kind of broke the ice, and we were just talking. So then he wanted to know what were we doing in Hong Kong, and I said, "Well, we're on vacation." And I guess back then you just
that's what I was
black
thinking. He probably wanted to know what you all doing over here.
Yeah, because you did not see black folks in Hong Kong at all. And so I told them we were on vacation. Then they wanted to know, well, it's kind of like if y'all, you know, I could tell this is what they were thinking. If y'all on vacation, what do y'all do? And so we said, well, we're
exactly.
Telephone.
Look, friends. You all had him more curious about you all than you all were about him.
And so they just couldn't believe that we were telephone operators on vacation in Hong Kong. And they wanted to know, where were we staying? And I said, well, we're staying at the Sheraton. Where are y'all staying? And he said, well, we're staying at the Regent. And I said, oh, okay. And so when my Neiman Marcus travel agent told me that her manager had recommended the Regent, well, I didn't have a problem with switching from the Peninsula to the Regent. And the Regent really was nice. It was a nice, nice, nice hotel. Great service. But, yeah.
And
you
if
know,
it's
now,
good
but,
for Vince and it's good for you and you made the right choice.
But later on, I did see that episode of Vincent. They were over there filming. Because one of the episodes took place in Hong Kong. I can't remember it. I'm probably going to see if I can find it on YouTube.
And when you mentioned that, it seemed like I was vaguely, because I used to watch Vincent. I was a regular watcher. When you mentioned it, my memory started going. So, well, didn't they be on vacation? Didn't they leave the set, the Hollywood set? That's what I was thinking. So you're going to have me Googling, going to YouTube, trying to find that episode.
Me too. And then, you know, he let me take a picture with him after we talked for so long, and I finally got up the nerve, and I said, do you mind if I take a picture with you? And he was like, no. And so either his friend or Michael took the picture, which I have posted on Facebook several times.
That is cool to bump into him way over there. That was funny. Man, he was more interested in learning about you all.
How do you poor-ass niggas get over here? that's what most people were thinking, because I know Michael and I were on a tour, and it was about three white women from Indiana. They were teachers, and that's the first thing they want to know. You know, well, what are you all doing over here? We're on vacation. Where did you work? We're operators at the phone company. He worked in information or director assistance. I work in long distance. Well, let me just tell you, I didn't think an operator could afford to come to Hong Kong. How can you afford it? I said, well, really, and I started getting nasty. I said, well, really, I can't afford it. I said, all I earn is enough to pay rent, car note, and buy dog food. I said, listen, ain't no young son so good. You know, white folks. They always think that niggas don't know nothing or can't do anything.
Right.
So, and Michael wouldn't say anything. I guess maybe he didn't know what to say or whatever, but I just got crazy.
But they had his fingers, look. And you could have said, well, on your teacher's income, how do you get over him?
But, you know, it was not my thing to come back with them as stupid as they were, because how can teachers afford to come to Hong Kong?
Right.
And truth be told, Hong Kong really wasn't that expensive. It was one of the most affordable places on earth before the Chinese took over. Loved the city, but that was one of the reasons I kept going back. It was so inexpensive, except for when I stayed in the region. Hotel was expensive, but everything else was reasonable. Because, I mean, folks would give me like $10, and I'd bring them a slew of souvenirs back. Because I don't know how much you gave me. I bought you that suit. I bought you a suit and something else, and I know Diane came by my apartment.
Yeah, you brought me that a nice suit. That's what I'm saying. You converted my American size, and it fit me perfectly. Right.
And I know.
And so don't say, but that's when we had our standard American sizes. Now I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. And Diane gave me $10, and I said, well, Diane, I don't think I can bring you much with $10. She said, well, you said everything is so cheap. I said, yes. I said, but not $10. But I brought her a silk blouse. I brought her a necklace and something else. I bought her several things for her $10. So, and I mean, a bunch of folks would be giving me money. Every time I went to Hong Kong, I think I probably had about 20 names with how much money they had given me. And I was trying to keep all that separate. Mm-hmm.
But maybe we'll visit Hong Kong, too. Oh, after we go to Dubai.
No.
Maybe we'll go.
No, you don't want to go to Hong Kong now because the Chinese have taken over. It's not what it used to be. Because, see, when I was going, it was the British Crown Colony of Hong Kong. It was ruled by the British. And I went in 1995 because it was converted.
Well, Hong Kong,
back
I won't be
to,
seeing you. Hello, Dubai. And UK and Paris. In Paris. Must still be your stomping ground, Paris.
And you see how they carrying on over there, though. I'm wondering, do I really want to go to Paris?
Right. Oh, my God. Okay, well, London. And even show out in London, but hopefully we can get London to stay peaceful.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Paris.
London,
oh, my God.
Yeah,
but did they ever? That's crazy what's going on in Paris too, and they're like screaming help because these people are going crazy. I heard a story that they drove into the mayor's home. Home, and his wife and children were in the home too. I'm like, this is crazy.
And they do that, they have them uprisings burning the city down by once every 3 years. So you just don't know when it's going to get volatile like that. And, I mean, we're not talking about just your average protest, because I've been in Paris when they were having street protests, but it was nothing like that. It was what it was. It was a protest. And I think me, Michael, and Clarence were there at that time, and we don't know what in the hell they were protesting. But, girl, we got in line with the folks and started protesting with them. We didn't bit more know what we were protesting than a fan in the moon. But we were out there with some Parisians protesting because we were going somewhere, and they happened to be going in the direction that we were going in. And it's like, yeah, if we want to go, we're going to have to get out there in the street and act like we protesting. So we did, and nobody said.
So you can get where you're going. Because if you're not, you weren't going to get where you were going.
Right. So when we got to where we were going, we got out to protest. I said, ain't this a shame? But, yeah, and they strike all the time, too. They strike just because.
I noticed that they take their strikes and protests. We thought we had some crazy protests. I noticed they take these protests to a whole other level. I bet those police officers over there would think again before they kill an innocent driver.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! And these American cops need to take note. Because these Americans might say we need to start showing out like the Parisians.
Well, the Parisian thing, you've got all these North African immigrants there who live in the suburbs surrounding Paris, and they don't feel like they are able to blend in or are treated like the native French people. And Paris, it's not like it was back in the 20s and 30s when they were so accepting of black people. But the black people that were over there were artists, I guess you would say, poets and singers. And it wasn't a lot of them. But then you've got all these migrants and immigrants that have come there, and it was pretty much to do the work that Parisians didn't want to do. But these people stay, and, you know, it's fine. We'll let y'all come here and work, but we're not going to accept you into our society. You know, you're beneath us. And and then people don't want to feel like
Latinos,
that.
Like the Latinos, and then the Latinos create their own empire.
Yeah, but the system over there is different, where these black people can't do that. And it's not a lot of opportunity for them because the form of government is totally different from the form of government in this country. You know, because they're like, if you come to this country, you can achieve the American dream. Well, it's not like that in France. And and the living
That's why I made the statement I made during the intro, because I know that's why many of our listeners are international. They think, even if they live a good life, they think of that American dream. That freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now I think they really carried it too far, because these people know when they're going to France that you're not going to be treated like a French citizen, number one, because you're black. And I don't care where you are in the world, people will let you know that you are black. And they do not like black. Because the white people around the world have been brainwashed into thinking that white is right, and if you black, get back. So I don't know.
Because as the president and the first lady, I'm amazed by their stories of racism and discrimination, even during their presidency and afterwards. People don't care if they used to be president and first lady or not. And even when they were, they still was treated with discrimination and racism. And they're such a colorblind couple. That's just crazy.
Yeah, and I guess because I'm saying like, well, y'all know how it is in France, so why do you go there? But then you have to look at where they come from, the poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So you see all those illegal immigrants that's dying, drowning out there in the Mediterranean. Trying to get from Libya to the Rock of Gibraltar, or trying to get to Italy or to Spain or somewhere, because I guess this is the equivalent of people who are leaving Guatemala and Haiti and all these poor countries to come to America, and they are willing to risk their lives and spend all their money just to get to American soil. Well, it's the same way with those.
Because my neighbors are Guatemalan and Mexican. Right.
Mm-hmm. The same with the migrants who go to France, Italy, Germany, and those places. Because, you know, they take the jobs of cleaning the streets and making sure the subways are clean or whatever. But they need to realize that you left poor, and what makes you think you're going to get rich coming to France or going to Italy or whatever?
Good point.
At least in this country, you know, we say, or they say, give me your tired, you're poor, you're hungry, or whatever. Those other countries don't say that. We can come here and do the labor, but now you might have to sleep on the street because we're not taking care of you. And so the immigrants get mad and then want to burn the city down, which they're wrong for that. I don't care if the police officer did shoot and kill that young man. No, that wasn't right either, but burning the city down is not right either.
Right. That's like looting over here. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Destroying your own community? And in their case, why did you – I mean, you came there for a better life, so why are you destroying it?
Exactly. And stuff that don't belong to you. Why are you destroying somebody else's property? And why are you mad at the mayor? I'm sure he didn't invite you.
I thought I was hearing things, because when I'm asleep, I'm like, okay, because that's how I found out about that South Bay story when he got in trouble with FIFA, with the soccer championship. But I'm like, I know I didn't just hear this, that they actually drove into the mayor's house and almost hurt his children and his wife. I'm like, because I haven't heard the story again, so that is a true story. I'm like, I know I didn't just hear that. Because I hadn't heard it again, but I was like in my, I was asleep, and I can hear the
that overnight ABC news, I have it on that, ABC's overnight news. I love it. And I'm like, wait a second. I know I didn't just hear that. That had to been, I had to been dreaming on. But I'm like,
no,
I guess so. And you're confirming it. I'm like, that's crazy. You literally were driving to the mayor. At first, I thought they were talking. At first, I thought they were talking about the president. And then I'm like, they said the mayor. Oh my God, it's crazy.
Mhm.
Wow. I'm gonna hurry up and call the end of the prayer our prayer line. So sometimes it ends at 1:00. Sometimes it goes on like yesterday, almost 2:00 or 1:30. I'm gonna call in. I was so happy to hear your voice after mine. I was like, look at you,
yeah,
mother. And you, Pastor, and Pastor Don Jr. And Pastor Don Jr. CEO. I love both of y'all testimonies.
Yeah, I woke up at 6:30 this morning, and I said, well, I'll catch the prayer line at 12:00, but, yeah, we've gone over, so I'll try to catch them tomorrow.
But it's probably still on. It'll probably be on about 1:30. I'm going to call and catch the end part.
Okay, well, I might do that or might get up and eat something. I haven't eaten since
right.
my little breakfast this morning.
Right. I ate something. Look at the chin. Look, I had Walmart brought me some little groceries, so I made me a blueberry smoothie. And you're right, for dinner I'm going to eat some little chicken. So I'm working on my small portions. And I'm doing like the Salt Bae diet, eating twice a day. But he said he drinks coffee and water. I'm like, I drink coffee, but I like smoothies and water, and I like teas. So I'm personalizing my Salt Bae diet for the 2 meals and eat a little bit, like fruits and snacks and nuts and stuff throughout the day. But it seems to be working. It seems to be working. I seem to have more energy, too.
Well, that's good.
Well, I guess it's like an intermediate fast. Eating like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I used to eat 1 meal a day, which I think I ruined my metabolism doing that. But that was what
right.
I had gotten. The Nation of Islam, they used to advocate eating 1 meal a day. And I did that for years. But I noticed when I really started trying to lose weight, I couldn't. And somebody said, yeah, then when you don't eat, your body, your metabolism slows down because it thinks you're starving, and it tries to hold your calories. So I try to know something.
Me too. Because I have to have something, and grew up old school. So breakfast, something in the morning is your gasoline, like putting gas in a car.
Yeah, my acupuncturist started me to eating breakfast because I used to just drink a cup of coffee
right.
when I got to work. I used to work super early and drink a cup of coffee. And my acupuncturist is the one that started me to eating breakfast. And I used to eat cereal, but I noticed cereal has so much sugar, even if it's not sweetened
right.
cereal or hidden sugar.
Because I have bran flakes right now. Yeah, because I ordered me a big old thing of milk. So, yeah, with our healthy brand, even our wheat bran flakes, and so we still have to be careful because they have a lot of sugar in them, huh?
Right, and then milk has so much sugar. And then I noticed when I
right.
stopped.
And I drink 2%, but I noticed it tastes sweet.
Well, I would get the 2% too, but it's full of sugar. And so I stopped eating.
I thought it was
cereal
just me.
For breakfast.
I'm like, 2% tastes just like the regular homogenized milk.
I don't like milk, period. I would just get milk because of cereal, and I wouldn't put any sugar on the cereal because I'd eat Raisin Bran, shredded wheat, or great grains or whatever, no sugar added. But I still was gaining weight, and when I stopped eating cereal, I noticed I started slimming down. So I think it must have been all
I'm glad you mentioned that because I have my so-called healthy cereal, but I'm trying to get rid of all the bloat, all the fluid, everything, all the fat.
I noticed, when I ate Jenny Craig cereal, I didn't have that problem because Jenny Craig's portions are so small. She kind of like the Chinese folk, honey.
And basically, that's my food addiction problem, my portion control. So I seem to have them pretty managed now. Right. And then, like you mentioned your cookies, if I have a bag of cookies or a container of cinnamon rolls, just eat one.
I can't eat one.
Don't eat two or three.
Yeah, I have to have the whole thing because I'll start out trying to eat. I love Pepperidge Farm Sausalito cookies, and it's 8 to a bag.
Uh-huh.
And I will eat 4, and I'm like, oh, and some ice cream. And then I'm like, okay, well, later on in the week, I'll eat the other 4. Baby, the next day, I'm eating them 4 cookies. And I have to force myself to stop at 4 because I could eat the whole bag and the whole pint of ice cream in one sitting.
Me too. That's me. I'm like, I should be able to just eat one bowl or one scoop, but I end up eating the whole thing, or I leave something and like, wait a second, let me just go ahead and finish it.
And you know, I don't know if you like Mentos. I used to see Mentos commercials, and I wasn't the least bit interested in eating Mentos, but I was at this company where I was working, and this young lady came in. We had come back from lunch, and so she was sitting next to me, and so I just assumed when she offered me the Mentos that I had bad breath because I had eaten lunch. And so, but she passed the Mentos because we were in training, and it was about 8 of us. And so she passed the Mentos around to everybody, and everybody got one. Well, I didn't know Mentos tasted so good. And so I asked her, I said, can I have another one? And she said, sure. And after that, I got hooked on Mentos. And so I can't eat just 1, 2, or 3.
I used to love their commercials, too.
Me, too. And so I have to eat like a whole roll of them. And so I stopped buying one roll at a time, and I would just buy the 6-pack. Girl, it's all I can do just to eat one roll a day. So I tried to cut back and just buy some little peppermints to give me a little mini flavor. But, honey, if I buy some Mentos, I'm going to eat the whole roll. I just cannot stop.
Right. And I heard Oprah say that bread is her guilty pleasure. It's one of my guilty pleasures, too. I can control it. But no, not at all. So I don't even have any bread up in here. I don't even have any bread up in here on purpose. So I don't eat it.
Yeah. I try not to buy bread a lot of times, however. I think I'm going to make me some cheese toast when I get off the phone. That'd be a good little snack.
And Cousin Linda, that's why I love cheese toast. And you're right. If I make 2, then I'm like, okay, that's good. I might be a little full, too. I'm like, I can make 2 more.
And when I started going to this diet doctor, because we used to call him Dr. Kevorkian, because all he did was wrote diet prescriptions. And and when I first went to him, I told him, I said,
my Dr. Quinn doing the Kim Kardashian shot. So I don't know. Look, I might end up getting one of those Kim Kardashian shots.
Oh, okay. Well, then I forget to stop. Thing. But anyway, I told him, I said, I know this sounds crazy, I said, but I am addicted to bread and I'm addicted to sweets. I like sugar. And he said, no, he said, that is a fact. And this was before it came out that there are addictions, there's things in sugar and white flour that trigger endorphins, I think they call them, in your brain.
Ooh.
More and more and more. And then I started understanding drug addiction and alcoholism.
Exactly.
Because they have ingredients that trigger that in your brain where you have to have more and more and more. Because it was just like one piece of bread just ain't enough, or if it's a roll or something with the meat. And I had to have this dessert. I just had to have something sweet.
Right.
And he said,
glad you mentioned that. And that's what I try to tell people. You know, Terry has his battle with drug addiction. And I try to tell him, that food addiction is just like, because when I'm working on my boundaries and I'm working on my schedule, food addiction is, weaning yourself off of food addiction is similar to, so I've never been on drugs, but I'm assuming to drug addiction.
Yeah.
Because, I'm eating. Why you can't talk and eat to me? I need to, when we have certain addictions to food, we need to be quiet and chew our food and eat. I'm not going to be on the phone talking and eating when I need to be focusing on getting my nourishment and eating right.
I can't enjoy my meal talking on the phone
right.
Because I have a sweet friend who
exactly.
loves it. But when she calls me and I'll say, well, I'm eating, and she just keeps right on talking. And so I'm like, okay,
right.
I get to smacking in her ear on purpose, and she still won't say, well, I'll let you go.
Right.
So I learned when I see her name pop up on my phone, I'm like, I just won't answer it. I'll call her back
right.
because I know she, for some reason, don't have sense enough
unless
to say, well, I'll
let
you go.
Together at the same time. I need my private, I need to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy it.
Because, yeah.
look,
yeah,
my mother used to get on me about eating so fast. My mother was like, how do you eat so fast? You don't even get a chance to taste the food. And really, it's healthier to chew your food.
Yeah, they used to say you need to chew it 20 times or something or whatever.
Right.
I was like, no, I chew it till I feel like it is chewed enough. Masticate, as
right.
they call it.
Right.
I learned long time ago that it's not my fault. I am addicted to certain foods. And
right.
it's quite flat.
I know when you post some of your foodie pictures, oh, your dessert, your main courses look delicious, but oh, your desserts are so, Lord have mercy, so delicious looking.
Mm-hmm.
And you always tend to go to places, that they are free with the size amount. some eateries feed you with the size amount. You always go to places low of the dessert.
Mm-hmm. But when Dr. whatever his name was would write those prescriptions for the diet pills, he would also tell you what you could and could not eat. He said nothing
uh-huh.
white. No white flour, no sugar, no potatoes, anything white. Stay away from it. And that included milk. And
right.
once you stop eating,
I guess
that,
I shouldn't be drinking milk, but I sure have me some milk because I make my smoothie.
Well, he said once I stopped eating those things, I no longer crave them. It'll get
right.
out of your system.
But I know, do you like almond milk? Because I like almond milk. I know a lot of people do almond milk and.
No, because my friend in New Orleans likes almond milk, and I told him, I said, if it don't come from a cow, it ain't. It's not milk. Excuse me.
It's
I don't
funny.
Know what.
One time I gave, my cat name is Sylvester, but his mother, Dash, when she was here, I know I poured her some almond milk, and it was so funny. My little great niece, Aaliyah, she was so tickled. That cat would not drink that almond milk. She was like, I don't know
that
what kind of milk this is, but I am not drinking it right. She was like,
yeah,
this is not
the
milk.
Cat was smart.
And I'm not drinking it.
The cat was smart because my friend has a liver transplant, and it's certain things he can eat and certain things he can't. Now, I don't know if normal milk is one of them, but I know he told me he liked almond milk, and I said, that is not milk, and it probably ain't healthy. It probably ain't nothing but some sugar.
Well, you know what? We're probably going to find out soon that almond milk is not healthy, but that's the big health kick now because that's what
some people
make their smoothies from, almond milk. You know, that they've instructed some of us to make their smoothies with almond milk.
Remember when coconut oil was the be-all, end-all, and I posted an article
right. and
the
coconut
other day.
Milk. Right, and coconut milk is big, too, almond milk and coconut milk. Right.
See, they come out with all this new stuff to boost sales, whatever industry it is.
Right.
And then after you done bought up a whole bunch of it, that's when they tell you the truth. This stuff wasn't healthy and ain't healthy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't jump on some
bad news, so-and-so. Right. Because my former manager from the store, I worked at the Metro Center, she was vegetarian. She didn't eat anything that had eyes. and she loved her soy, everything. And then Sandra Petro, you see her sometimes on my page, and I think I've introduced you all. Then I went into Rainbow, you know, when we had the health store Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
then
like
she became Right. She became, you might have met her, she used to shop in there because she was over the cosmetics, the organic cosmetics and skincare
mm-hmm.
department. And so I hadn't been in a long time. I had bumped into her, and she's a forgotten now, but she had been gay most of the time, and she was married to a successful doctor. And she said, Bethany, you won't believe this. I had to have a hysterectomy, Bethany, because of